Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent and U.S. Trade Representative officials meeting this week with Chinese Vice Premier in Madrid, with tariffs, export controls, and TikTok on the agenda. Treasury signaled over the weekend the current tariff truce will hold until at least November 10th, offers a short-term window of stability. Now, for U.S. ag, stakes are high. China has sharply reduced purchases of American crops, shifting toward Brazil and Argentina for soybeans and sorghum. USDA reports show no new soybean bookings from China for 2025-2026, while Beijing recently approved Brazilian sorghum imports and suspended U.S. shipments, citing quality issues. Now, farm groups pressing negotiators to secure firm commitments for Chinese buying, warning that without access to the top market, U.S. producers will face lower prices and growing competition. USDA September World Ag Supply and Demand Estimates report shows shifting global supply and demand patterns across corn, beans, wheat, and cotton. For corn, global production forecast at a record 1.25 billion metric tons, led by a larger U.S. crop. Brazil's crop raised slightly, 125 million metric tons, while Ukraine's harvest remains at 26 million. Now, despite record supplies, world-ending stocks projected up 4 million metric tons from last month. Soybeans seeing reduced global production. Argentina trimmed 47 million metric tons due to dry conditions, though Brazil remains at 162 million. U.S. production lowered slightly, but that strong South American output keeps world supplies ample. Global bean ending stocks projected at 127 million metric tons, up 2 million. For wheat, global production raised 5 million metric tons, 795 million now, driven by larger crops in Canada, Russia, and Ukraine. And cotton markets remain tight. Global production, 106 million metric tons, down 2%, with reductions in India and Pakistan outweighing a modest increase in Brazil. Now, USDA also out with livestock projections signaling shifts in beef and pork markets while leaving poultry largely steady. Cattle prices projected lower. 2025 steer price forecast trimmed to $176 per hundredweight. And for the hog price, adjusted downward, $65.50 a hundredweight. Broilers, turkey, all unchanged. And dairy milk production left largely unchanged. And the new all-milk forecast, $22. World Trade Organization's agreement on fisheries subsidies has officially entered into force after receiving ratification from more than two-thirds of its members, including the U.S. The agreement bans subsidies that support illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing, as well as subsidies for fishing on overfished stocks or in unregulated high seas. WTO leaders say the pact, the first multilateral trade deal, focused directly on sustainability. For U.S. ag, may gain competitive ground as harmful subsidies phased out abroad, but producers will need to monitor shifts in import supply chains and trade enforcement closely. It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
You are right in the heat of the season. With field maintenance, planting, fertilizing, and spraying, you don't have time for equipment breakdowns. Let Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, be your partner in keeping your equipment running at peak performance. Our factory-trained technicians support you with in-field service and genuine Case IH parts. Wiley has 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
August is the most recent data that we have to speak to, so you can find the August base MBM report on our Ag Manager website.
Kansas State livestock economist, Dr. Glenn Tonser.
And I would say that was a really good demand update. Specifically, 7 of the 8 categories that we track, we have a retail, so grocery store for at-home consumption, and then we have a dinner meal food service, like our away-from-home demand metric. 7 of the 8 proteins in both market channels had higher demand, higher willingness to pay values in August than July. I've been emphasizing the away-from-home part of that because there's been a lot of concern during 2025 about food service. To be determined if that was a late summer, before you go back to school, kind of vacation push. And to the extent people were on the road more than normal, then that's going to help food service demand because you weren't at home. You were out of town that week. We'll see if that continues in the months ahead. I obviously hope it does. But the update for August was it was a really good demand month per that metric. So it's a nationally representative effort. You know, every month we're surveying over 3,000 U.S. residents. And we do it in a way where our numbers are, as I said, nationally representative based upon residents. So there's more from California, Texas, than Kansas, to your point, because that's the population relative in our nation. Gender, income, ethnicity, age, and education. There's 6 specs there. So they're nationally representative statistics. You can go pull down quarterly data at the state level. That was not the original intent of this, but again, kind of at the request of the checkoff, we did that. Justin Bina, who's now at Arizona State, kind of helps and leads a dashboard pulling the same data there. So you can get state level insights, but you can also get generational insights. So I made the comment about age, and we ended this month's base report with another generational update. Each of these base reports have the protein values in them. So what we're asking these MDM survey respondents is, here's a list of 12 things. What are the 4 most important in your protein purchasing decision? What are the 4 least? And of course, the 4 you don't pick are in the middle. And taste, freshness, price, and safety regularly are the top 4, or more narrowly, most frequently picked to be a top 4 item. And then conversely, things like environmental impact, animal welfare, origin traceability, use of hormones and antibiotics are the 4 that are most often in the bottom 4 bucket. And we summarize that every month. Those are kind of the relative ranks of importance. I highlight that for a couple of reasons. One is taste and freshness regularly carry the day. I've been using the phrase meat is having a moment here in 2025. I think the taste profile of meat is a big part of that. And it lines up with this protein values relative point. But to my comment or my shout out about generations is we put out everything I just said every month, but we ended the August 2025 with another figure that broke that apart by generation. So baby boomers, Gen X, and then millennials, you'll find a fancy graph at the end of the August report where we summarize these protein values separately for those 3 generations. And what I would impress on our listeners here is the relative order. So taste and freshness are most important regardless of generation. Environmental impact, animal welfare, so forth, rank lower regardless of the generation. But the willingness to trade those things off, kind of how steep those trade-offs are, differs a fair amount by generation, and specifically the younger generation, which is millennials here, those born between 81 and 96, are more willing to give up taste or price or some of those higher ranking things for some of those production practice claims, where conversely, the older generation, baby boomers, are much less likely to give up taste, freshness, price for those production practice claims like environmental impact. This has direct relevance for those that are, you know, doing niche marketing, right, who might have an interest in a claim that you're interested in producing. And I'm trying to make the point here, just on the case of age, not all U.S. residents are equal. This is just one component of that. There's a lot more to it than that. But we have a large, very diverse, by all terms of the meaning, diverse public, and we need to keep all that in mind.
It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
This is Agriculture Today.
I'm a dinosaur. I actually believe in free markets. I actually believe in the elegance of competition.
Chairman of the Joint Economic Committee in Congress, Arizona Representative David Schweikert.
We're actually going to touch a little bit on the economics of creative destruction. And if you want productivity, because I'm going to show in these charts with where we are demographically, if we don't have an explosion of productivity, we can't make wages go up. If you are a working person in this country today, particularly like in my Phoenix Scottsdale area, if you're a working person today and you haven't had about a 28% pay hike in the last 4 years, you are poorer today. It's called inflation. Biggest tax in modern history was those 4 years, 3 years of inflation, because we now get to pay back our debt with inflated dollars. We're crushing people. The way you make wages go up is two things. You raise people's wages because of inflation. Well, that just means you're treading water. Or productivity. Now, some of the things we did in the reconciliation budget that we passed before break is expensing, research and development expensing, things to try to get investments to do things better, faster, cheaper. But we're going to have the brutal discussion of, if you have a society where you functionally have the same number of 18-year-olds coming in, and next year it's going to be lower, and next year it's going to be smaller, and the year after that it's smaller, and people like me, baby boomers with gray hair, there's a whole bunch of us, you got to legalize technology. Is it rational? And I'll say this a couple times. Is it rational to make it illegal to automate a port? Now, I say this in, I'd love to have the, you know, dock workers and the unions love me. Maybe they'd even send financial help and say nice things about me. But it's not about that. It's about the entire continuity of society when we create these barriers for automation, for doing things better, faster, healthier, cheaper. If you're going to have a command and control economy, let's just admit we're populists. We want to run the economy. We want to own businesses. We don't believe in the economic theories of creative destruction, creating new, better, faster, but give up on the productivity cycle. And then you tell me how people's wages go up. You have a middle class that's getting absolutely crushed and squeezed. Their purchasing power is stagnant, if not reduced. Doesn't have to be that way, but it's going to happen through policy here. And it's like no one here went to their basic elementary school economics class. So look, the chart here, I'm going to try to make a point, is customs duties. We all talk about tariffs. I had heard a member here a little while, well, a couple of days ago, say, customs duties, tariffs are going to pay for everything. No, they're not. Now, they do pay for most of the big, beautiful bill. But the fact of the matter is, last year we took in about $77 billion in custom duties. This year we're going to take in, our best guess is $190 billion. Yay! Except the problem is, did I mention to you a little bit ago that we borrow about $6.5 billion a day? So the increase in tariffs, custom duties, is going to pay for like 11 days of borrowing. 365 days, we just covered 11 days of borrowing. For anyone that's watching, much of what Doge was doing was fascinating. Go look at doge.gov right now, and you'll see a couple hundred billion dollars of potential savings, though only a fraction of a fraction of a fraction have actually been executed, because we in Congress can't even do basic rescissions. We did a rescission before August. It was total of like $9 billion. So if you're borrowing $6 billion, we covered a day and a half of borrowing. And it was war here for 6 weeks to save that much money. We're living in a mathematical delusion where people don't understand. That's 12 zeros. This is, they don't see the difference between a trillion and a billion.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
You hear that? That's the sound of forever. Because there's nowhere else you'd rather spend forever than on land like this. Tending a herd, growing crops, raising a family. At Capital Farm Credit, we thrive at helping the next generation of farmers and ranchers like yourself by providing advice, products, and opportunities to help you build a life on the land you love most. To learn more, visit CapitalFarmCredit.com. Capital Farm Credit. Together, we're better.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
So this past week was a pause, slight pullback, I would say.
Kansas State livestock economist Glenn Tonzer.
There's a lot of watching of the broader macroeconomic environment, specifically what the Federal Reserve might do. And I'm going to break down the numbers, but we had a little bit of a pullback in the cutout that spilled into the cattle price space. So AMS called Fed cattle here in Kansas on Friday at $240, bedding down just a hair from the week before. AMS called the feeder cattle market here in Kansas lower on, as well noted in other cases, lower volume. Couple exact transactions of note, 56 head weighing 682 came in at 378. Larger lot of 237 head weighing 873 came in at 347. Again, those are Kansas transactions last week. And then a similar trend showed up on the board. When we look over to the CME contracts, the October live cattle contract is 230, down about $5 on the week. October feeder cattle at 346, down more like $13 on the week. And I think this is a broader pause and kind of a, I'll say some demand uncertainty maybe. So the boxed beef cutout was down $10 on choice this past week. So, $400 on Friday, and it was 410 the Friday before, and select was 378, down about $7 from the Friday before. Time will tell if this is just a temporary pause or if it's a broader, right? Near-term peak, so to speak, was established a week ago. The supply fundamentals haven't changed. I think I've said this for 6 months. I don't really apologize for it because I think it's the case. Is I think the majority of the movement is driven by demand updates. And there's a lot of broader economic watching of the Federal Reserve. You know, updates in the labor market kind of suggest the broader economy maybe wasn't quite as strong as we thought it was even just 60 days ago. That potentially rains on beef demand is the point to be determined if this is a 1 week update or longer, but it's definitely worth watching. My concern would be if in fact the economy is weaker than we thought, and maybe even worse if we're on the front end of a stagflation situation. So, you know, stagflation is when the economy is not growing and yet we have inflation. That's a terrible combo. It has happened before. I'm not pronouncing that's what we have. Please don't misunderstand. But some of the fears are maybe we have the recipe for that. And that's hard on lots of industries. And it would not be good for beef demand is the reason I'm interjecting it here. I obviously hope and pray that's not what we're on the front end of. But there's been some elevated inflation concerns last couple of months and some more recent concerns about just general economic strength that makes the Federal Reserve's challenge even more challenging because of their dual mandate. And I think that's all just putting some pause on what have been very hot markets in the cattle space for several weeks now.
And on feedlot returns?
This is presuming no hedging. So it's cash, cash, cash. You paid the cash price for feeders. You received the cash price for Fed. And you basically bought the feed as you went at the cash price. And because of that, in an elevated cattle market, the numbers we're putting out are historically high. So if you pull up this, you know, the most recent posting, for example, for September, we're projecting a positive return of $700 per steer and $579 per heifer. Well, what's underneath that is a notable increase in the sales price. So those animals leaving the yard relative to what they were expected to be when you made the feeder purchase. So had you made some hedging, you're not going to experience quite that large is the point. I will also interject, you know, we do projections 9 months out. So the furthest out we're currently projecting are for cattle leaving the yard in May. But I'm interjecting this because by the time we get to February and March, much less May of 2026, we're actually projecting negative returns. And the biggest thing that's underneath that is much higher placement prices. So a steer that leaves the yard next May is projected to have come into the yard roughly 6 or 7 months earlier at a full $100 per hundredweight higher purchase price. I'm a little bit Dr. Bear on this is times are good right now. If you're unhedged, fully recognize that. And that's great to talk about, but it looks like it could be short lived given the notable increase and a frankly, even higher increase in feeder cattle prices than fed cattle.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton to expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
with Agriculture Today. Here's Tony St. James.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Ranking Member, for taking up my bill, the E-Permit Act, today.
At a hearing last week in front of the House Natural Resources Committee, Representative Dusty Johnson on the National Environmental Policy Act.
Most all thoughtful people seem to acknowledge that the way we do siting and permitting in this country needs some pretty serious improvement. A lot of independent analyses indicate that we have the most onerous siting and permitting within the developed world. We do have an opportunity on a bipartisan basis to make improvements. We've done some of that, but I think we have a lot more to do, and I'm excited that in the Westerman-Huffman era, we can get a lot of that done. I think most of us realize that our current environment, our current landscape for permitting and siting, does not deliver on time and on task. So often the delays with this siting are not actually linked to environmental protection. It's not that there's a holdup as we do serious and important analysis about protecting our key resources or assets. It's just that we don't really have our act together. So we don't really know how to share, transfer, and analyze the information that are before us. I think modern technology gives us a real opportunity to solve those problems. So where are we at today? So often multiple agencies, of course, are involved in this siting. And the way they are exchanging information is antiquated. It is hard to imagine that they are still sharing individual PDFs that can get lost in people's email, that they need to package them together, send them to somebody else. Well, do they really have them? I don't know. That rudimentary process, reduces people's ability to understand what is really going on with permitting and what really needs to happen next. The E-Permit Act addresses those problems by establishing a framework for agencies to implement a digital permitting system and a unified portal. Again, this is just about us as a federal government handling the information, handling the data in a fundamentally more modern way. This is not a new concept. On a bipartisan basis, we have said these words before. In the Fiscal Responsibility Act of 2023, Congress acknowledged the potential for digital solutions and required the Council on Environmental Quality to study how to actually move this ball downfield. In April, President Trump showed good leadership in advancing that cause, telling his agencies that they did need to start, begin to put this together. And indeed, shortly after, CEQ issued a comprehensive permitting technology action plan to try to get a government-wide strategy for making this happen. So the E-Permit Act just builds on those efforts, the congressional efforts of 2023, the executive efforts of this year, to provide legislative clarity and direction on how agencies should build out this and operate this digital permitting system. This is basic. There's no boogeyman here. This is about establishing federal data standards so all agencies speak the same language, and this is about having a government-wide permitting portal so that we've got a one-stop shop for this really important project information. This is an important piece of legislation, and I want to thank my partners in this effort, Scott Peters and his team, especially his team. His team is way better than Peters. But they have been, no, of course, leadership comes from the top, and they've asked the right questions. They've wanted to make sure that we had a work product that was going to add value and wasn't just politics. Like, let's actually do our job and actually make this country better.
It's Agriculture Today.
You are right in the heat of the season. With field maintenance, planting, fertilizing, and spraying, you don't have time for equipment breakdowns. Let Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, be your partner in keeping your equipment running at peak performance. Our factory-trained technicians support you with in-field service and genuine Case IH parts. Wiley has 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
This has been Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
This is Agriculture Today.
Yeah, on Friday, the market took the information from the USDA, and that move on the day on Friday was a push to the upside. So the market initially was trying to add some premium into the prices here relative to the initial interpretation of the supply-demand report.
Bob Maurer is with Manduka Trading in Chicago.
Taking them one by one, looking at the corn scenario and not going through all the data, but just cherry-picking a few of the line items that I think are of interest. USDA cut the corn yield by 2.1 bushels per acre for corn, down to 186.7, but also raised harvested acreage by 1.36 million, resulting in a record 16.81 billion bushels of production. So yeah, the yield came in bullish, but when you multiply it by the probable numbers of harvested acres per the USDA, we're still looking at a sizable quantity there in terms of production. Ending stocks, usage for ethanol and exports was pushed higher. Carryout pulled back a bit to about 2.11 billion bushels, but still, net-net, stocks are historically large. Okay? So when you kind of take all that information together, you might look at some information, for example, the yield, that looked bullish, but really at the end of the day, I don't know if it had a big impact in terms of really changing the game, and I think the market's realizing that at the moment. If we look at the numbers for the wheat that came out of the supply-demand report, in terms of exports, the USDA raised U.S. wheat exports by 25 million bushels, and that lowered ending stocks more than I think the trade had been expecting, so that net-net is bullish. But again, the biggest problem with wheat right now, in my opinion, is the global situation. So you got rising world output by 10 million metric tons. We saw the USDA boosted production forecast for Russia, Australia, EU, Canada, Ukraine. And ending stocks also were increased by about 4 million metric tons. Okay, so the output up plus 10, but then when you factor in expectations for higher global feed use and exports, that eroded some of that plus 10 away, and the ending stocks are still climbing, though, by 4 million metric tons. So we saw in the same data set that the USDA raised wheat exports here for the United States, but also in the same data set said there's a lot more wheat out there worldwide. So again, not the rosiest of situations for wheat, and wheat obviously didn't have the bump up to the upside that corn and soybeans did late last week after the report. They're still sitting, the wheat contracts are still sitting pretty much near their lows. When we dig into soybeans here, looking at the supply and demand report, and again, me just point out some of the data that I think is interesting here. In terms of acreage and yield, the USDA raised harvested acres by 200,000. Yield was trimmed by 0.1 bushels per acre to 53.5, and net-net, that put production slightly higher overall. Balance sheet, crush was lifted 15 million bushels, exports were cut 20 million, and residual up 3 million. Ending stocks net-net rose 10 million bushels to about 300 million. So, had a big push to the upside on soybeans, but when you actually look at the impacts of these numbers, not necessarily the most bullish scenario. And again, I think that's one of the reasons that the market's pulling back a little bit today. It's kind of a wait-and-see attitude.
It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
When you raise dryland cotton, one of the only things you control is input costs. Reduce your seed costs by as much as 75% without sacrificing yield potential with BSD9X cotton from Brownfield Seed and Delining. Perfectly adapted for dryland acres, BSD9X is large seed and has excellent early season vigor and consistently yields at the top in university trials. Find out about BSD9X by calling 806-637-6282 or visit brownfieldseed.com.